Accession number 20459, Reel 7.
Captain Spencer, Reel 7. I think you were saying that suddenly Germans started to appear in the chapel.
A German started to appear in the chapel. So we, with our guns, we gestured him to come out of the chapel, which he did without any hesitation at all. So we then went back into the chapel to find that a manhole had been raised behind the altar. And there was a circular staircase, or iron staircase, going down into the depth of the crypt, I assume. We shouted down that obviously we heard some noise of some kind. And I hoped that somebody was speaking English, because we said that unless people came up, I'd drop two or three hand grenades down. So whether they had heard that, or whether they decided that there was no exit for them anyway and they were just as better to come up. However, they did start it back. And in actual fact, 21 people came out from this crypt where there'd been nobody on. All very docile. A lot of them very young. And I don't know what they've been told, but this lot seemed particularly frightened. But they all trooped away, were taken away as prisoners, having that they had no arms on them. All the arms had been down the bottom of the crypt. So this was quite a sort of unusual end to an attack which we thought we'd already taken everybody involved.
Had you had to face a lot of fire as you were going up to the wall of the monastery, the outer wall?
The fire from the, once we'd gone through the, there were, in actual fact, there was only some fire after we'd gone through the wall, but not particularly in our direction. There was some fire from the people in the trench, but again it was, you know, not aimed, and they were overpowered very quickly. Luckily the number of people were very close to the gap anyway, so yes, that there was not a long line of them. And because we had immediately fired at the windows, there were no other apertures. The trip across was without incident. I can't even remember. I mean, there was some firing, but it could have been our place. There was nothing coming towards us.
What about when you were going towards the wall to go through the gap before you...
Well, no, there was some fire further on, but where we were standing there, and it was only the grenades coming over the wall at that stage. Most of the people had retired, obviously, from this trench. There were only a few people there. Probably there weren't as many as eight either side. There might have been only five either side. So there was not, at that stage, the resistance had been largely broken. And because of the fire at the only apertures in the wall, we didn't, and crossing this distance. We then, having taken the place and all the people being cleared, my platoon and another platoon were positioned in the same trench against the wall, and the company headquarters of the two companies involved were in the building. We were on the outskirts. I was supposed to report every so and so often, or I would be called by over the radio to attend a meeting. by this time, known that the monastery was taken, the Germans started mortaring rather than shelling the particular area. And when I would be reporting to the O group, to start with, I walked very leisurely across this open ground and into the building. Directly I'd close the door behind me, the mortars would fall over the area, and I thought, crash, I'm just in time. On returning to my little tent, I moved a little quicker. By the fifth or sixth time I did it, I was right, go.
You were sprinting.
I was absolutely sprinting across the distance, it seemed, the first. And all my blokes were cheering madly in great humour as I got there.
Presumably this meant the Germans must have had an observation post that could see into the monastery.
Well, I think they may have had a radio. The monastery was very high,
yes,
and nobody could have really seen from an observation place. And there was a sheer drop away from the monastery. We were just before the River Ronco anyway. The Arno, right before the River Arno. We weren't, however, there in this area too long. I think other people came to occupy the monastery, and we were again taken out of the line, very basically. And the Germans had withdrawn across the Arno by this time.
When you were attacking the Incontro, on your approach to the outer wall, did you have any fire support, any artillery or mortar support?
Well, as I've said, that the previously the place had been attacked, although not taken, and I think that much of the resistance had already been low. Two other companies had gone to attack the place, and 19 platoon was, as I say, the reserve platoon at this particular station. When I got there, the monastery still had not been taken, and the resistance from the monastery at that stage was minimal. I mean, there was some fire, but it was not near this big gap.
Yes.
People were, in most cases, if not in some form of a trench, were almost standing around or behind trees, and there was no hard fighting going on. There's only the grenades coming over the walls.
But had we put artillery onto the monastery?
No, no. There was no monastery, as far as I can. Well, there may have been originally to make this hole in the wall, but there was no artillery fire while we were climbing the mountain.
Yes.
Because our troops were already there.
Right.
So that, and there was no sign that it had been heavily fired at anyway, unlike Casino. The walls were comparatively undamaged, so there was no evidence that it was very heavy fighting. It was a very significant part of that line. It was in a very strategic defensive position, which is why it was of importance, I think, to the command of that particular stage. But we understood that the enemy then had withdrawn over the river, so again there was a lull in seeding.
What did you do when you were out of the line, when you were back in reserve?
Well, normally speaking, one would revert to an area where one would go into tents. Sometimes we would get a shower unit turn up. Unfortunately, there were no sort of facilities particularly. There weren't canteens. You were living in the field. Most of the time you slept out. Again, as far as I was concerned, often by preference. But if you were out of the line and you could occupy a closed building, obviously you did. And if there was a bed in it, well, even better. But, we didn't have sheets or anything like that. You slept rough. The only time I remember that we had a comfortable time was much earlier in the campaign, which is just, we returned to a camp at Assisi, where instead of having to put mud all over our brass, everything had to be, the boots had to be cleaned, the brasses had to be cleaned, and everything became...
You applied bullshit.
Yes, something... I've got a photograph of this, by the way, which I'll show you shortly. And Assisi was quite a pleasant break. I remember going to the church there, and also there was a hotel, which name I can't remember, overlooking a valley with sort of balustrades around it. Unfortunately, some wild officers had used some of the statues on the edge of the wall for target practice, but that was very quickly sat on. And we even had wine occasionally with the meal. And had the odd, you know, again, not particularly sumptuous meals, but I mean, certainly something to eat that was rather better than coming out of a mess tin or done by army cook.
How did you normally arrange your feeding?
Well, your food sometimes that you would just have your billy can and pellets and you'd warm up bully beef or this, that and the other. I can't remember the food being particularly nice anyway. But often, if you weren't in too exposed position, then rations would come up and you would get semi-warm. I mean, they would bring containers, so you would have mostly a form of stew of that kind. You know, I swore I'd never have bully beef again, the ways they various did it. But I don't say that the culinary expertise in the line was particularly good.
Did you do your own cooking, or did you?
Well, not often. I mean, yes, occasionally. Again, if you were out of the line, unfortunately, the local populace would lose their chickens, and so you would do this. I think on one occasion, some enterprising person had butchered a pig. We didn't get much of it by the time it got round, but yes, certainly. So that, again, food would be brought up to you, provided you weren't, or even if you were in a, sometimes, I suppose, occasionally you'd get food up, but people weren't too keen to go through artillery fire and water fire to bring you food. So we always had emergency rations that we took with us.
You said that in the line you slept out for preference. Why did you prefer sleeping outside?
Well, normally speaking, that if you're in a position actually right in the front line, the houses were targeted. But also, that if you were supposed to be protecting a line, you needed the people spread out over a distance. If they all crowded into a building, then they weren't being particularly observant as to what happened. If you're out of the line, certainly, you know, I mean, you would try and create that sort of atmosphere. But I often had, well, in particular, I can tell you later, is that that getting people out was essential, that they were in a position to counter any attack or observe any movement and so forth and so on. But that's only when you're actually within fighting distance rather than half a mile back or a few hundred yards back, well then that's fine. But buildings will always be targeted for shell fire anyway.
Were the buildings in that part of Italy strongly constructed?
A lot of them, basically, yes, they were really quite solid stone places, but I remember going into a particular building where an armour-piercing tank shell had gone straight through the wall, not taking a big hole, but taking somebody's head off with it. So you're still sitting against the wall without a head. And if you get an armour or a what's-name shell into a crowded room, you're far safer in a slit trench
than you would be inside a room. When you were sent to the battalion, you were supposed to be a liaison officer for armour. Were there any occasions up to the Arno when you got armoured support?
There was occasionally armour, but that I didn't experience. We came into where there had been army support previously, where, for instance, that there were a number of our tanks that had been destroyed, one of them very, very recently. And one of the things that I will not forget is an officer climbing out of a slightly burning tank, and he jumped off the tank, but he left, his leg was still in the tank, and he didn't realize that until he actually landed. We were going forward at this time. I very briefly dealt it and tried to tie a tourniquet around the stump, but there were already people coming back and I couldn't stop anyway. So in my experience with the Duke of Cornwall Light Infantry, there weren't many. It was certainly, I can't remember actually having support, although there were tanks in the area, but the territory was not suitable for tank fighting, really, on the whole, anyway.
Did you see anything of enemy armour during the advance up?
Yes, that again, not so frequently, but yes, there were several occasions where we were not always in exact contact with it. There was one occasion where we had been in by a farmhouse and along a hedgerow when a German tank came along the lane, and I hastily called for our Piet mortar to find that although we'd been fighting very heavily, that they'd got the mortar but no bombs in it. So that the tank then sailed by and turned right. I can only remember one other occasion where we did have a shot at a tank at a distance. It hit it, but it didn't seem to either penetrate its armour or so and so. But basically, that in my experience, we didn't have much contact either way. We saw them in the distance, and they certainly would fire at us, but we weren't in close contact. And because obviously the armour was precious to them, they didn't persist, I don't think.
What was the air situation like?
What's the air?
The air situation, yes.
Again, luckily at this stage of the war, there weren't too many air attacks. In fact, very few. It was quite terrifying when they did come in. Most cases, luckily, it was a bit to the left or a bit to the right of us, but you were certainly witness to the horrible screaming of the snookers coming down and the bombs going off. But no, the German Air Force at this stage of the war was not as strong. There were bombings further back, but not particularly bombings in the front line.
Did you ever get close air support from our side?
Very seldom either. Artillery support, but we hardly saw. Bombers might be going overhead, but there was no evidence of close support on forward positions. Because they were changing again so frequently. I mean, it was a very fluid war all the time.
You mentioned also that you and at times near the Americans. Did you see anything of the Americans?
Yes, not too much. In the first battle, where we were on that side of the hill, there were a very noisy unit of the Americans on our left that were making an awful lot of noise. We had some confidence in my first experience of how irrespectfully they treated their officers and argued, and where's our bloody food, and we don't like this, and you know, I thought, well, you know, what an indisciplined lot they were. But in the rest of the campaign, apart from in the back areas, I didn't come across them. We certainly didn't fight close to them at all.
Did you have much contact with them in the back areas? Did you ever get together with them?
Not really. Not really at all. There were very few occasions where we even saw them in, even when I had a leave in Naples, did I see a great evidence of them. I mean, they obviously were in Italy, but they were not in evidence as far as we're concerned. Only one instance. I remember the military police in Naples that would parade the streets, and there was a curfew on time, and I myself and another interfered where the army police had shortly before had stopped their jeep. Four of them got out and started to question a black soldier in uniform, and within seconds they were beating him with their batons, and we rushed up and said, oh, you know, what the hell's they're doing, and that, I thought for one moment they were going to set on us as well, but they eventually decided to push off, and the bloke is outside the curfew, but he was only apparently 100 yards from where he was billeted, so we got him in. So that was an unpleasant side of the, and they were in Africa I saw them, but not really in Italy, and again we were hardly ever out of the front line anyway, so.
You arrived at your platoon fresh when it was involved in fighting. How long did it take you to get to know your platoon? And to
very, very quickly. When you are living cheek to jowl and sharing trenches, and you make friends very, very quickly. I think that again the relation between officers and men is a strange one, but I think that because you're in awkward circumstances, you're sharing food, you're living in rough circumstances, you get a respect for each other and they for each other very quickly. I think the friendships were very quickly formed, because you're really supporting each other. You realise that, you know, each one is depending on the other.